Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby. And today I'm incredibly excited to be joined by Phil Palalis, who is a content strategist at Scrappy ABM. Yes, we are interviewing our team to talk about some of the things that they have done previously that have made lots and lots of revenue. So hopefully you can learn a couple of things. Phil, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks. That was a super stoked and very powerful intro. I'm very excited to be here.
Genuinely stoked, because one of the things, and I want to say this very bluntly, like, I hired you. And one of the things that I was excited about when we hired you is you've got some really great processes around how do you work with specifically subject matter experts. One of the greatest things that I hear often from people when we're talking about ABM is it just feels like MarTech and sales tech and rev tech and agencies are talking about how to create content, but the people that they're using to create content work on the revenue team. So how do you get someone that's a scientist or an engineer to get bought in on creating content? And that's super hard. So I'm excited to dig into that specifically for everybody that's like not got it on easy mode and they're marketing to marketers. Like, so that said, how do we get buy-in?
Yeah, how do you get buy-in? Because essentially, you're trying to get somebody who had a lot of passion about a specific product, a specific problem, a specific solution that was in the market, and they decided, because they were generally a consumer of the problem, that they wanted to solve the problem. And they probably, like you said, they could be a scientist, they could be a coder, they could be a salesperson, they could be any number of different things. And a lot of the time, those people aren't those personalities, those their life history, the things they've done in their life haven't involved being on a camera, haven't involved writing. It's just getting somebody who's not naturally a fluent speaker or a person who can explain their situations very easily to do it in front of a camera that the whole world is supposed to see, that the whole world is going to be consuming potentially even 3 years from now, 10 years from now. So it's like, it's a big deal to get buy-in, and it's a big deal to get the right people talking about the right things at the right time. It's just not an easy thing to do. So like, how do you get buy-in? It's a lot of things. There's a lot of steps. I mean, we can go through how to get buy-in, like as a process, but like ultimately buy-in comes from generating passion and giving confidence to those people to say, like, you can talk about this. Here's how you can talk about this. And this is the platform in which we're going to talk about this. So buy-in is not something that's super simple, but it is possible in any scenario, really.
Yeah. Well, I just love the simple framing of it's giving them the confidence to speak about the thing that they're already passionate about. And I think often of there's quite a few people that I know that are typically more shy and reserved, but you get them talking about a specific topic and they just light up. So I'm curious, when you are trying to instill that confidence in an SME to actually like get them to create the content, what is the process you're running through that instills that confidence that they can do it?
The process that kind of like from a historical perspective and getting people to do what we need them to do as a marketer, which is document the reason why they're doing the thing, why they want to do the thing, and why it matters that they do the thing, is like giving them a avenue and a venue that is natural to them from the start. So like if you have a founder who's a technical founder and they don't get in front of the camera, they don't get in front of rooms of 10 or 20 people all the time to talk about the thing, what place, what location, what situation as a marketer do you find them opening up to you the most in? Is it a one-on-one meeting? Is it a room with two or three people in it where they can have a good back and forth? Like you need to get the person in a situation where they're already comfortable and then figure out how to record it. Like, how do I sneak a camera in there? Not in exactly that type of way, but like, how do I get the SME in a situation where they're the most comfortable they'll ever be in talking about the thing, and then help them and facilitate them talking about that? That's not really a question of buy-in, but like ultimately the buy-in comes when they feel confident that they can do it, and they feel confident that what they are going to do is going to be presented in the right way, and they're not afraid or fearful about the outcome.
I mean, it sounds like essentially work with them to create content in a way that is easy and natural, and then let them have a pretty heavy hand in review before it goes live, just to make sure that they feel comfortable with what's being portrayed about them. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, I would say the buy-in piece of it is going to be massively important in you saying, like, having a heavy hand in the process and the approval, the confidence in that. You have to have that. Otherwise, the system fails. Like, it can't work, because you'll get to a point where, yeah, we have two or three big pieces of content in the pipeline, but like if they see it, or if somebody is saying like, hey, saw you on LinkedIn talking about X the other day, and they're like, wait, what the heck? I don't remember seeing that. That's going to be a giant problem. But like, if you can hold their hand along the way and say like, this, we're going to record two or three episodes, we're going to edit them to where you're presenting the idea in the most impactful and efficient way, and then you're going to look at it and you're going to give the thumbs up. And also, you need to be able to set the table on like, here's the expectation of what it's going to look like, how it's going to sound, the purpose of it, because they might be expecting something totally different. But if you can take them through the process along the way, then that's going to just get you even closer to having like a regular cadence of subject matter expert content.
So I'm always curious, because one of the things that often happens is, and I want to be super clear, like, I've been the SME at times, and we've created content that someone was saying like, this is really good, and like, it's going to be fantastic once we put it in the market, but like, I'm uncomfortable with that sometimes. So like, I'm curious, do you have any tips or advice? Because like, I produce a lot of content, I'm comfortable with most things, but there are certain people that if they've never created content, they're going to be uncomfortable with anything that's created. So how do you help coach them through it's okay to let some things out there?
To me, it's a matter of expectation versus reality. And then the belief that something is better than nothing. So I think there's a couple of pieces that we could potentially unpack in there, which is like, what's the expectation today on content? What's the overarching expectation? Like, and it could be as easy as saying like, hey, what do you consume? What type of content do you consume? Like, are you on YouTube? Do you watch YouTube videos? What do those YouTube videos look like? Do they look like a movie? Do they look like a webinar? What is the content that you consume every day look like? And how do we set that expectation with them to understand like, a lot of content today is just a couple of people sitting in an office having a conversation. Like, that's good enough in most cases. And some content is going to be like explosions and music videos and heavily produced, but that's not going to be all the content. So like, you have to set the table of, what do you consume? Can you envision yourself being a part of something like that?
I think that also then directly ties into like, how should we be thinking about using SME content? Because let's say hypothetically, like, I'm just thinking a lot about the content we've created, and we do a lot of podcasts, and they're pretty low stakes. But I've flown out twice in the past year to do courses to like actual studios and sets, and like, very, very different perspectives and different levels of prep. And like, so as I think about doing SME content, I'm curious, like, how do you think about actually putting that in market and actually making sure that it is the best representation of the brand? Like, is it, I'm asking all around it, but essentially, like, as you think about account progression and as you think about content mapping, like, where does SME content actually fall in a buyer's journey and how is it best utilized?
Yeah, from a progression model perspective, a couple of things you'd want to be thinking about is, like, if you have an SME who's a true, genuine, like, hardcore science and, like, numbers person, and they've put together this incredible product and they love talking about all the inner workings of it, like, maybe that is better for something that would be farther down in the progression. But, like, you have to figure out, like, where's the expertise lie in how you're talking about the thing? And at what point do you really need this person to be involved? So, like, and maybe it's even, like, thinking about at what point in this might be a little bit convoluted. At what point in the sales process, ideally, would you want the founder to be in? So, like, if the founder would be really great at, like, selling the initial, like, happy feelings, all of the touchy-feely part of what you're selling, like, put that at the top of the funnel. Put that at the higher up level of the progression. If you're thinking about your sales process and you say, like, oh man, this our SME would get really in the weeds with this person to help them really understand, like, the true value they're going to get out of the thing at the end of the sales process and they're going to close it, like, start building content around that portion of it to say, like, we're going to, at the lower end of, or at the meaningful engagement piece part of the progression, that's where this content needs to live. So, like, it's really thinking about, like, where does the subject matter expert's opinions, point of view matter the most for somebody's understanding of what you do and how it fits within their needs.
So it sounds like also founder personality. So if you've got, let's go back to the intro that I just did. Like, I'm a pretty excited person, so I'm probably going to be good at the top of the funnel. But admittedly, I spend a lot of time creating content, and there's a lot of product updates that have happened in ABM platforms in the past, like, month and a half that I may not have personally dug my hands in every single day because I'm doing other things. So yes, can I get in the weeds and technical on some things? Sure. But, like, if that's where I'm needed every single moment of every single day, it's not really my skill set. Where we could actually pull in SMEs is, like, what we're doing right now, where I hadn't thought about this, but, like, I'm literally interviewing SMEs on their areas of expertise. So it sounds like aligning with where that person fits from personality and actual subject matter expertise. And, like, if that's more top of funnel on theories and philosophies and thought processes, that's thought leadership. If it is more, this is how you actually go and execute the thing. It's more bottom funnel. So that's not overcomplicated, actually. It's, like, shockingly simple.
It's pretty simple. Like, it's hard. I think a lot of times people overthink where something needs to be or where people need to know the piece of information. If it's out there and it's well presented and it has good SEO around it, like, people in the right section of the progression are going to find it. And we as ABM marketers can help people find it by including it in all of the content that we're building out. And you as a company can do that in the same way. So
I love it. Last three quick questions would just be, you know, as we think about SME content, obviously one of the things that comes along with that is actually having a face. Like, there's a person. And I think depending on the organization, sometimes the person actually has a larger recognition and personal brand than, like, the brand in which they actually work for, which has many pros and many cons. But I'm curious, as you're thinking about SME content and specifically how that engages buyers, like, why is it important for companies to actually have faces that are associated to their brands?
I mean, why do you have a face? Why does anybody have a face? Because it's how we see the world. It's how we communicate to the world. It's like we've got eyes. It tells us how somebody's feeling when we're talking to them. We've got a mouth. That's where words come out at. Like, ultimately, we're human beings, and the most relatable thing that we can latch onto is another human being. Too often in B2B, and I've thought about like a skit that comes from this, like, what, there's no building sitting on a Zoom call, like trying to buy a thing. Like, it's people. So like, you can't look at your problem, solution, product and say like, a building is going to buy this. A human's going to buy it. A human's going to tell them about it. And a human's going to hold their hand as they walk through the process. And what better human to do that than the human within the organization has the most passion about the thing, the problem they're going to solve. So like, all day long, it's important to give your company a face, because faces are the people, the things that are going to actually make the most impact when it comes to communicating what you do, what you love, and the benefits and the value that you can offer to any company that you're trying to sell to.
I love it. Clearly I'm bought in. I mean, it's like our main go-to-market. So I'm curious on two other quick fronts, which would just be, as you think about time expectations, like for subject matter experts, they typically get dragged in 1,000 different directions because they have subject matter expertise. So they set a time expectation on what will be required of them to create this kind of content.
Yeah, it really is dependent on how aggressive you want to, or I guess what's the go-to-market requirement that your product company has, and like, what's the time frame in which you want that to become effective? Because the longer or the shorter time frame you want to be effective, you probably have to produce more. If you have a long time before you need to see like significant results from that, maybe you can take a little bit more time and go to the market a little bit slower. So it really depends on how aggressive you want to be in doubling down on subject matter expert content. I would say like, spend as much time as you can, but where the rubber meets the road, as somebody who produces like podcasts and helps create micro content for people, like 30 minutes, an hour total a month, you can probably get enough subject matter expert content along with other things that you're doing from a social media perspective. An hour recording a month could probably get you through the whole month if you don't have super aggressive goals. So like, or it could be 2 30-minute conversations a month. And it also depends on like how, it depends on a couple of different things. Does your subject matter expert need handholding, or does your subject matter expert already have the capacity, the technical capacity to go and do this on their own? Do they need a producer? If they do need a producer, it's probably going to be, they're probably like super busy. You're going to need like a 30-minute window twice a month to go record something, ask questions, help facilitate them, maybe build an outline, help them create the focus and the theme of whatever the recording is going to be. So I would say like, at minimum, you need an hour a month to get a full month's worth of content, like micro content anyways. And that's probably stretching it. So like, if you can get 30 minutes a week, like that's ultimately going to be a really good amount of time spent on the front end. And then obviously there's all the back end production stuff.
I think through it, I try to set expectations when we're selling people in the sales process on a podcast, which is typically driven content, is 8 hours a month. So that is some prep, the actual hour of recording, and then also reviewing stuff for editing purposes. Because you also need to do some form of internal review to make sure that you actually like what's being sent out, because it is your name and your face. That felt like a huge lift. One of the things that I had done previously is our executive team were all experts in different areas. So I just had like, I did like a cycle and I had 8 executives, which was too many executives, a side note, but I had 8. And I did one a week for every 8 weeks as a way of lightening the load. So it doesn't have to be one person either. Like, it can just be a group of SMEs that all create content.
Yeah. How do you think about that and where each of those executives would potentially fit within the content, like production piece. Like, are those executives from different parts of the business, different functions of the business, different roles? And like, how did you think about that when you were doing that? I'm flipping the script.
Yeah,
asking you questions now.
No, it's all good. When I worked there, we served multiple verticals and they all had different vertical expertise. So I think of all content as problem or vertical. So when I think about all of the content we create, it's typically problem specific on the ways in which ABM programs fail. One of the things that we will then do moving forward as we get more vertical expertise is actually double down into, this is not just a problem, but this is actually a unique specific problem for the manufacturing space or the hardware software space or whatever it needs to look like. So when I did it at that former organization, it was all verticals. So they just each had different expertise. And then I just had them talk about the unique problems to that vertical. And then the CEO and COO speak about more general problems that were things that our company could solve.
That's kind of like the question about like, where does the content fit within the progression model? Like CEO, much more higher level, initial like engagement parts of the progression. And then maybe some of the like technical folks within the organization would be able to get into the lower parts of the progression.
Yep.
Interesting.
I think that's it exactly. So Phil, last question for me, and then if you want to flip the script again, go for it. But as you think about like how do we communicate success, again, SMEs are typically in fairly high demand. So to say, I need an hour of your time per week, they're pretty protective of their calendar. So I'm curious, how do you go ahead and forecast what success might look like so that you can even get people bought in?
It's going to be a couple, like how you judge success for these types of programs are going to be not nearly as straightforward as you would love. Some of it is a little bit more high level, ethereal, feel goody. And then some of it's going to be like, so-and-so opportunity came in. They said they heard about the podcast. They listened to a podcast. They came in and now they're going to be a customer. And some of it's going to be more of like, oh, SEO friend pinged me on DM and said that he saw the show and thought it was cool. So it's a bit of a, like an ego. I know egos aren't exactly like a great thing to have in business, but like ultimately when we do things that our peers notice, it helps to solidify that that is something that's going to be working. So like it could be a huge spectrum of things. Like it could be a report that you look at every month and say like our podcast is growing by X number. Oh, it's also, that seems to correlate with our opportunities that are in the pipeline. And then the close rate. It could be if you're just starting out like, hey, Mr. and Mrs. CEO, like, how are you feeling about the podcast? Like we've been posting on it regularly. Oh, it looks like I'm having a lot more conversations around this specific topic. So like it really varies and depends on sometimes even what the subject matter expert themselves like focuses on. If your subject matter expert's a financial subject matter expert, you're probably going to want to bring some numbers and some tables to the table. If your subject matter expert is a CEO who really values like relationship building, it's going to be like, did you hear from any of your friends that whether or not they like the podcast or appreciated it or anything like that? So like, I think it varies. But ultimately, we want to get down to like, how do we report on this with real numbers? And sometimes that's a little tricky.
I appreciate the honest and transparency here of this is not going to be a perfect science. But in the same way that you measure other content, if you put it out there and you see an increase in engagement that then results in pipeline, you know, it's winning. If you don't, you know, it's losing and you should fix it. That's about it. So, Phil, if people want to find out more about you, where would you point them?
I would go to LinkedIn. I'm pretty regular on LinkedIn. Just look for Phil Palalas. You'll find me or you'll find my dad. One of the two.
For those of you that don't know, Phil's dad doesn't work here. So if you do Phil plus Scrap ABM, you'll find Phil.
Yep.
Again, Phil, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrap ABM, yeah. And we'll see you in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.